Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for this week. And today we thought we would talk more about men and women and marriage. But this week we're going to just talk about men and how to get them to do the stuff you want them to do.
That wasn't quite what I was told you were going to talk about.
Well, that's what I'm sure that people would be really blessed to know how to get men to do what they want. But first we thought we would talk about the David French article that I talked about earlier in the week, as he wrote a follow-up piece, Why Should Men Be Physically Strong? And I guess he got a lot of hate mail.
Yeah, well, men were upset with him.
Some men were.
They had their feelings hurt.
And wrote, because he suggested that they...
Well, I mean, I guess they were bullied as children because they weren't strong. And so they felt that David French was carrying on...
being the bully.
Right. And his response was, well...
go become physically strong.
Right. It was... The problem isn't me saying you should be strong. The problem is the bullying. And the bullying needs to be met with...
strength.
Right. The bullies need to be told to shut up and be quiet. And that can't be done if there's no one strong enough to do it. If only the bullies are strong, then there's a big problem. A
continuing bullying problem.
Right.
Well, don't we just need more re-education of children to stop bullying?
That's worked for 2,000 or however many years, thousands of years. As long as the smarter people are always the less violent, and the more educated people and the wealthier people who have enough resources are always less evil than the poor people who are weak. That's shown to be true throughout society, history of society.
Okay, but tell me what happens, because this is really not true for women. What happens? How do boys, sort themselves out? If you have one boy that's really physically strong, say, and he's never met with any kind of challenge physically, what does that do to, why should little boys be physically either dominated by their fathers or...
Well, here's the thing. I mean, naturally, most guys, from the time they're little to now, they measure each other up. You meet a guy and you say, "Am I stronger than him? Am I faster than him? Am I taller than him? Could I take him down if I had to?" And that just eyeing of another person in that way, or another male in that way, is just the way. Most men, I'm not saying every single man ever born, but that's the way most men just look at other men upon first meeting them. What kind of guy is this? And you're sizing yourself up against him. And I think sadly, when boys as young boys have not been physically overpowered by their fathers, and by that I mean in a just, kind, gentle but punishing way when they're bad. I mean, I think boys need to be spanked so that they know from a very early age that there is someone stronger than them, that they can't beat down everyone they want, and that when they misbehave or treat others badly, there will be a reckoning. So what that does from a very young age is when you meet other boys and you see someone weaker than yourself, you don't automatically go to domination mode.
You have some self-control.
You've learned from your father that you need to control your strength, and that there is always going to be someone stronger than you. And so it makes most sense to be kind and gentle, unless your father, if he's a good father, will teach you to use your strength to help weak people rather than hurt them. And so my dad taught me that, and most of the fathers of my friends taught them that. We didn't have too many bullies in our elementary school. I don't remember actually any bullies in our elementary school. It was a very small school. But most of our parents taught us that. And so when we went into high school where there were some bullies, or junior high where there were some bullies, most of my friends would have been the ones sticking up for the weak rather than teaming up with the bullies. Yeah.
Because it seems like now the solution to male aggressiveness is to just weaken the male, which is what David
Most absurd. Well, two things. One, I mean, you often hear in debates over whether or not we should spank children is, well, violence begets violence. And actually, yes, a certain kind of violence does, like abusive, just irrational, I'm angry with you, so I'm going to spank you. Right, that teaches the child that when you're angry, you lash out, right? But a disciplined, quiet, calm, gentle, okay, you've now done something wrong, so here are the consequences, and one of those consequences is going to be a physical pain, not because I'm angry, but because you violated the objective standards that we've set down for you. That doesn't beget violence. What that does is that instills a respect for order, law, justice.
Well, it begets self-control, which
it does,
and control over your own emotions.
Right.
Which, even if you're physically weak, if you don't have control over your emotions, you might lash out in other ways.
Yeah.
You might not be able to beat somebody up, but you might still be aggressively unkind. Use, you know, bigger means of hurting somebody that besides your own fists.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, goes to the second point, which is, you know, when children are spanked in a just way, when they break a rule, not when the parents are angry, when they actually break a rule that requires spanking, and not beating, spanking on the rear end, where God provided that little cushion there. When that happens, then there's, like you say, control. But when the answer is okay, well, the answer to bullying is to make all of our boys weak and not emphasize physical strength. Well, there are going to always be boys who are not weak and are strong, and they'll just dominate the weak ones. Mm-hmm. We're going to be creating a society that reflects the Lord of the Flies rather than
order and
men who are able to use their strength.
Gentleness, actually.
Kindly, yes.
Kind and gentle. Right. I mean, yeah, strength should be associated with kindness.
Right.
It's interesting that sort of link has disappeared, or is disappearing. That strength is associated with unkindness all the time.
Right.
And I think that's one reason why people get unhappy in their marriages, because if you have two sort of weak people who are unkind to each other,
whining at each other all the time.
Yeah, then you do have to have some sort of backbone, some strength, and some kindness to two together in order to deal with each other in a real way and with your children, and mm-hmm. not be overpowered by your children. I think that's one alarming thing, is to see parents
helpless,
overwhelmed, overpowered, and helpless in the face of their children. I see it all the time when I'm shopping.
Yeah, it's a classic thing. The kids screaming down the aisles.
Helpless mother.
And the mother, you know, kind of smiling, oh, would you like a piece of candy?
No. Or, the mother exhausted and stressed. No, she's not.
Or placating. Well, that's what she's doing. When she's exhausted and stressed, she placates rather than...
Yeah, but she's also just unable to deal. Like, she just doesn't know what to do. And so she's angry. You'll see anger, unkindness towards the child, and serious unkindness from the child to the mother. And then utter helplessness. Mm-hmm. Like, the parent just does not know at all what to do. Mm-hmm. And that is really surprising to me, because it seems clear to me what to do.
I'm going to take little Johnny out to the car for a moment.
You should not spank your children in public. We argue about this a lot. Right. Because bad people will call Child Protective Services on you, and you shouldn't mm-hmm. do that. You just really should be careful, I think, in public about how you are with your children.
Yeah. But we figured out ways to get around that.
If you need help, you come talk to me privately. Private message me. And I'll tell you how to... Well, you have to discipline your children at home so you can control them outside, basically. Exactly. You shouldn't have to discipline them outside. But we're off topic of men's strength.
Just while we're doing this real quickly, the three rules we established, that we got from actually Doug Wilson and
which Stan. Have been just so helpful to us in the ordering of our common life.
One is that the child is never allowed to defy you, say no, or any kind of defiance at all.
Or blink.
Or no, is met with an immediate spanking, not... Oh, no, if you do that again, I'm going to spank you. No, it's an immediate spanking.
Well, and that's quite young.
We're starting at 11 months.
Yeah.
And the spanking is not a hard of that at that age. It's just kind of it's a startle on the diaper.
moment to the child.
Right. And you say no, and then you just do that consistently. And the child learns that he or she is never allowed to say
you.
And that's primarily the man's responsibility. The husband has to stand up and do that, because often, not necessarily with you, but I've heard with many women, that's really hard to even contemplate.
Well, because an 11-month-old baby is super cute.
And they smile. No. Right, and that's often at that age, it's them to smile, and it's so cute. But just imagine, if you let that go, then you're going to have a 15-year-old.
Yeah,
And it's not stamping cute. Off and
well, it's not cute in a two.
It's not cute in a 2-year old either.
Being cute in two and four and six.
Right, so you just do that consistently, and really by the time the child, if you do that consistently, by the time the child gets to be, six or seven, they know.
Well, no, and they know never... it. They don't say no.
Well, no, but you have a well behaved. You don't have a 6-year old throwing tantrums.
Never.
That's our children haven't thrown tantrums past the age of 3. I don't think.
Well,
We don't allow them to do tantrums. But okay, so that's the first rule. Second rule is immediate
delayed obedience.
Delayed obedience is disobedience.
That's actually part of number 1.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Or whatever.
Meaning, if you hesitate, you've already disobeyed. So if you want to teach your child to count, if you feel like maybe numbers are a problem, you could count, because to counting for a child will teach them to count. That's all you'll do. So if you count to 10 or 20 or 100, 150, you're just teaching the child to count. You shouldn't have to say, I'm going to count to 3.
If a child can obey at 3, the child can obey at 1. Right. So there's no, and so the delay is disobedience. The delay in waiting until you get to 3 or waiting until you get to 10 or whatever it is.
As soon as you speak. That's disobedience.
Right.
Whenever you speak, the child should leap into action. So we should have a little caveat, because a lot of times I speak to my children, say in the parish hall, and they gaze at me, and they don't hear me at all. This is imperfectly lived out in our lives. People coming to me and saying, I just saw your kid disobey you. But there should be like a baseline that you're working off of.
Well, what the caveat that Doug Wilson makes, and I think it's good, is the difference between defiance and
foolishness.
Child not hearing, or a child being preoccupied in his own head when he's daydreaming about Star Wars or something, and you tell him to go clean his room and he literally didn't hear you,
or he goes up and lies on the floor of his room
lying up in the air.
You go up 3 hours later and he's playing with all his stuff, and you shriek, and he's surprised because he went upstairs.
And it wasn't defiance. He really intended to go let's spin off, because there's a distinction between outward defiance and just forgetting being a child and making a mistake, spilling milk on the floor or whatever.
Yeah.
And you don't punish for childhood
foolishness.
Weakness and foolishness. Right. Second rule I want to get to last, because that'll lead into our next topic, which is male strength, right? Because the respect of the mother. So the third rule is no lying and no deception. The deception.
So your kid can't lie to you. If your kid lies to you, it should feel like the end of the world for the child. Like, your response should be shock, horror. You're not really shocked, but you're like, I can't believe you would lie to me. Are you kidding me? And then it's really painful.
Yeah.
And usually you might get a child that's a tiny bit older. We found that our kids will try lying maybe around the age of 6, mm-hmm. but between 4 and 6. And they haven't maybe been spanked in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they are really surprised at how horrified you are by their lie.
Mm-hmm.
And then they become truth tellers.
Right.
Well, no, you just want to be able to trust your kid.
Right.
You know? Like, you want to be able to know
and you want them to know that you are able to see into their deception.
Yeah.
I mean, lies are stupid and kind of cute when they're, like, 4. I mean, when you can see through. Obviously, the child did not, you know, clean his room. Like, yeah. Yes, my room is totally clean. You go up there, and obviously,
it's not
you can
clean.
See stuff coming out of the room. But they're going to become more deceptive as they get older and more crafty at it. But
it's also more like they'll be playing, you know, and one of them will hit the other one and nobody will know what happened. And then you'll find out that actually everybody did know what happened.
Yeah.
And
it gets more difficult to figure out the truth.
You want everybody to be really quick to tell you what actually happened.
Right.
And, so there's, if a child tells the truth right away, there's always mercy. In a big way, grace right. for the child that's telling the truth.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah. That's a really big one that I wouldn't have thought of before we had kids.
No, I wouldn't have either.
That has panned out to be really, really important.
The third rule, and I think this has been dramatically helpful in our is the child is never allowed to disrespect his mother in any way.
Yeah.
Or her mother. And usually it is the female in the marriage who is the one that the children learn is a softer one and the one that they can manipulate and the one who they can run circles around and make it stronger and older, even intimidate. I've seen that happen.
Yeah.
And
no disrespect for mama.
And so what the father needs to do, because the father's more keen toward this, is the father needs to notice the way that the children speak to his wife, the way they look at her, the way they stand when they're talking to her.
Mm-hmm.
And if he senses any disrespect, which you're able to do as a man, because you know when people are disrespecting you more than I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't usually notice it.
So when you see any of those little signs of disrespect, the winking of the eye, the narrowing of the lids, the upturned nose, the frowning little face.
Well, the tone of voice.
You like, step in.
I already did that.
You step in. You don't. And you step in immediately. Say you better not ever talk to your mother that way. And you, the child needs to, as Doug Wilson says, always see the father looming behind the mother, even when he's not there, so that he's afraid of ever back-talking his mom.
Yeah.
Ever saying no to his mom. I mean, when your child says no to you, that's horror. That's horror and terror is going to be unleashed. But when he or she says no to his mother, that should be amped up like 10 times.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, especially when you're talking about boys, is they learn then that the mother, when they learn that their mother is to be respected, that transfers over into other women in their lives.
Well, yeah, so you can say, that's my daughter, don't talk to her that way. When they're fighting with their sisters, uh-huh. which they'll do, you can say, you don't speak to my daughter that way. You've said that about
right.
boys. When they're taunting their sister or something,
Yeah, so you do that to my daughter, I'll be.
Yeah. I'll be you. No, we don't beat our children.
Right, right.
Hashtag
yeah,
right. sensitivity.
Right.
And kindness.
right, but they learn, you know, they learn that they can't treat women in the way that I think they naturally would, which is like other boys. And
you need to treat each other differently. So I'd just like to point out before we carry on and talk about men's strength that if you do follow these rules, which is a great surprise to me because I didn't expect this at all, you end up with pretty happy, emotionally uncluttered children for the most part. That when you have a...
They know where the lines are.
Yeah, and they're pretty happy. They're just not stressed. They're quick to laugh, cheerful. You can go places. You can take 6 children one in a place and not worry that somebody's going to run away from you and like
right.
get hit by a car, because people that, you know, they have little children can have self-control over their bodies and their emotions. But you also end up with just really cheerful, happy kids, which I didn't. I assumed that all our children would be miserable.
Right. This actually gets to that question that you were asked last week. Well, when you're having conversation time, how do you get your kids to be quiet and go away?
You could say,
be quiet and go away. if you laid the groundwork and you say, look, we want some time alone, so you guys
need to go. Yeah, we're speaking to each other. You go do something else. Because the other element, I think, to childhood happiness is that they know that they're not as important as their
parents. Oh, that's huge. That is so big.
And that our relationship with each other and our time with each other is more important than anything that they think they have going on that they need attention for right then.
A lot of both marriage problems and parenting problems stem from the children getting between the mother and the father.
And being more important than the marriage relationship. The mother
thinking, oh, my children are such sweet little cherubs and I love them so much more than my husband. And they're more important. And getting mad sometimes at the husband for not putting the children before the marriage. So the husband will want to be with... This is the classic one that I've seen. Is the husband will want to be with his wife. And she's so preoccupied with the children, she doesn't want to. And then she gets mad at the husband for not focusing on hyper-focusing on the children.
The way she is.
And that's a... God, that is a sin on the part of the woman. Because the primary relationship in her life needs to be her husband, and vice versa.
Yeah. Marriage first.
Yeah.
And also... Well, we never really had any problem with this because I just prefer to talk to an adult rather than a 2-year-old. Right. It's never been hard for me to say, you're a child and you aren't saying anything interesting. You go away and play.
Yeah.
And because your father and I are speaking to each other. So this also helped me. I can't remember where I read this. But when you're having dinner, the husband and the wife talk to each other. And the children can gradually learn how to come in and talk, but the father and the mother carry on an interesting conversation between the two of them.
Yeah.
And the children don't interrupt, but, you know, you might ask a child a question and they can join into the conversation, but they don't dominate, and their screaming and talking isn't right at the family table. And you gradually develop a family conversation that way, where they learn to be interested in the things that you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
We've never had trouble with that because we really like talking to each other. I think if you don't enjoy talking to your spouse, this one would be really tough because you should talk.
Right. But do it for the children.
Because it builds
in a real sense of security with the kids. When the kids see that you love one another more than you love them, it really actually makes them more secure.
Well, I wouldn't say more than...
Our parents aren't going to break up. Yeah, our parents aren't going to... I'm not number one, and what my demands are aren't the thing that reigns here. There's another one of those limits that are so important for kids.
It's not that they're not as important or that we don't love them as much as we love each other. We love them in an entirely different way.
Right, which is good.
And they are... In the settled order of things, they can't. Their little lives can't.
They come second after the.
Which teaches humility.
Yeah. So after the marriage, actually third. They come in second after God.
Then the marriage.
Then the marriage. Then the special occasion China. Then the children.
Then you're still not our favorite. No, all our children are our favorite. I think we're going to get a lot of hate mail for this.
Yes.
Pretty sure. This is going to be the downfall of the podcast. We've never had trouble with this, but we talk to each other every day, and the children are not to interrupt us when we're speaking. Of course they do, but they're constantly told.
Right, we do this imperfectly, but this is the idea.
We also, once a week, have date night, and I read a Charlie's article a long time ago where he said he didn't need a date night because he just... is in love, or he just talks to his wife all the time. I thought, well, that's great for you, but I need a date night.
And
it's not like I need a special fancy date every Friday night, but we do have to have time where the children are not to speak to us. And we cheat. It's not like the children sit quietly playing Lego and
reading their Bibles.
Reading their Bibles. We plug them in. They get unfettered access. Well, not unfettered, but they get the device of their choice Friday nights.
Yes.
So they disappear all over the house and they play on shiny screens.
Right.
And
which we have to be more careful about monitoring now that we're getting to have teenagers. So.
They eat pizza and they have a fun night and they just
veg out.
You know, veg out. And we talk to each other and they don't. So that's a thing that we've done that's been really helpful. Just they can't come in and like ask for stuff and cry.
Right.
If the internet goes out, they have to fix it themselves.
Yep.
Which is
that's great.
Important for their overall development to know computer technology skills. So that's really, really been important. A long silence now.
Well, should we change subjects now that we're or move seamlessly into the next?
So I wanted to ask you an important question that I've sometimes gotten. How can a woman get her husband to do stuff? How can a wife get her husband to do stuff around the house? And like dishes, laundry maybe, but fixing things, cleaning up, you know, the garage, building a birdcage. I don't know what it is that women need their husbands to do. How can a wife get her husband to do stuff without destroying the marriage?
Well, yeah.
And I thought I would ask you that.
One thing that doesn't work is nagging, like the constant, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this, when are you going to do this, why isn't this done yet? That drives most men that I know, and myself included, to never want to do the thing ever. I mean, you put it off, and you put it off, and you put it off, and the nagging increases, and that makes her more angry, your wife more angry, and so it's just this perfect storm of frustration. But what men, what works with me, and I know that most people say that men need sex more than anything else in a relationship, and well, there's some truth to that. But the reason that sex is such a big thing for men is because I think the primary need for men in a relationship is, and it's going to sound really vain and self-exalting, but so the primary need is admiration. I mean, a man really needs his wife to admire him, to admire his work, to admire his himself, his brain, his mind, everything. Yeah, no, it's serious though. That's so important. And when it's missing, a man feels worthless.
Yeah.
And it's counterproductive for the woman, because even if she doesn't think he's all that great, he ends up being worse than he could be.
Yeah.
Because he has nothing to aspire toward. When I feel that you admire me for something, that makes me want to do that thing. The reason sex is such a big thing on men's minds is because that is a moment where he feels
admired,
wanted, needed. Yeah. That's why pornography is a big thing for men, because those women on the screens always want you.
Yeah.
they seem like it. They always desire you. They're never bored with you. They're never looking at you as if you're a dud. So I think there's a key. That doesn't excuse pornography use at all. I'm just saying that.
But that's one reason why it's so addictive.
And that's why it's addictive to the male mind, I think, or one reason anyway. And so, if you can harness the power of admiration and use it on your husband.
I just cackled. Sorry.
So,
I should laugh in a moderate low tone.
Right. No, I mean, I do remember one time that you were down at a conference in North Carolina. It was for classical school. You were like Virginia. There for a week or something.
Virginia.
That's what it was. And I took it upon myself just...
Oh, that's right.
Remember, I cleaned the entire house.
That was crazy.
I deep cleaned it. And you got home, and you were...
I was stunned. Well, you went through all the toys in the basement, and, like, there was no dirt in the basement at all. It was amazing.
Right.
I do remember that.
And you heaped piles of praise on me.
Yeah, I was... alarmed and, like, amazed.
Yeah, yeah.
You never did it again, though, did you?
No, but that heaping on of praise stuck with me. I mean, that wasn't the first time I did that, but yeah, I remember that stands out in my mind, and that's when I started polishing the furniture. That's when
you started polishing the furniture.
That's when I started doing a lot of the kitchen work. That's when I started doing, because you responded with, oh, this is what.
Yeah.
Right. So now you tend to when you ask, not always, sometimes you fall into nagging.
I don't ever nag you.
But I
can't recall nagging you ever, actually.
You don't do it very much. But so now you tend to tell me how much it would make you happy and there's a sense of I can impress her and make her admire me more by doing this thing.
So one thing that's really been interesting over the last several years is that I haven't really developed a list of things I really want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, we've moved here, so we've kind of developed a list together, but you took on household care projects on your own terms. Like, you decided you wanted to do the garden up because I think you did it for me. At one point you told me that. But I didn't say, why can't you do the garden? You just decided to do that, and you kind of had your own, you sculpted the beds. It was amazing. And I wouldn't have even thought of that. Like, I think cooking, you know, we sort of have divided the cooking, but you cook what you are interested in cooking. There's not this kind of, wow, Matt's not upholding his end of the bargain, and I wish he'd do these things so that the household could function. There's, we kind of each have our domain in household care, and You participate so much that I'm not stuck for help, but I'm also not trying to ask for certain things either, honestly.
Right.
I don't feel like, do you think that's not true?
No, you don't. I rarely feel nagged. I don't ever.
Well, or asked to do a particular task.
Right. You do sometimes, but yeah, I don't.
It's not very often.
It's not an often thing. And that's because of what you've built over the course of our marriage, which you trained me to, like Pavlov's dog who gets the little treat
amazing, sweetie.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you do that?
Right.
That was so nice.
You're such a big, strong man for doing this floor or whatever. So, but there, it does have an effect. It's the best way to get it done.
And it's easy for me to admire you both when you talk to me like a human being, and then you'd be like, you do something, and it does surprise me, and it's really great. It did help me, though, to sort of admire and respect you. When I tell all our marriage and our young married couples that are going to get married that the male ego is like a delicate, tiny china teacup. You hold it in your hand.
You can crush it pretty easily.
One false move and it shatters.
Mm-hmm.
And not that you would then live in fear, but more
or
like,
not tell the truth. You tell the truth.
You just want to be really careful about your language because, and how you talk, because the teacup is something worth preserving. It's worth something. It's fragile, but not in a like a.
So like your husband comes, it's just a hypothetical scenario. Your husband comes home, he's made a mistake at work, his boss is mad at him, his colleagues think bad worse of him. He's humiliated.
Yeah.
He's humiliated. He comes home from work.
And his ego is cracked.
Right. So he's just had a horrible day. The opposite of what you want to do is say, well, that's typical. Yeah, that's what you do. I mean, what's your problem? Look down at him for whining. Why are you whining about it? Just pick yourself off the floor and do better the next day. Don't do that. What he needs.
You can apply the healing balm to the ego.
Right.
You know, that puts it back together.
Right.
With language. That's very upbuilding. Like,
right, well, I know you're so you mentioned he's an architect or something. So you messed up in this project, but I've seen you. You're an excellent architect.
And the
building fell down and killed lots of people. But you're an excellent architect. I know you have great.
I've seen you do really good buildings.
And don't lie, but go to some real honest achievements and things that you do admire about him. That's when you want to pull out the things you honestly
see in him
and that you're impressed with.
And
that's important just as a habit to get into for women, I think, is when they're married is to find those things they do admire about their husband and think about them and dwell on them
and then say them out loud.
Say them out loud, right?
Over and over again.
Right.
That's the poor point where it breaks down, because you can have all kinds of nice fuzzy feelings and never say any of them with words, and that. And just like the man can feel all kinds of affection for his wife and never say anything, never talk to her. So you have to put it in. You can't love your wife and, if necessary, use words. You have respect your husband, if necessary. You have words are necessary for the whole thing. So, well, again, we've had another week of our perfect marriage. Maybe next week we should talk about ways we've really messed up.
That's good. I'll ask you questions about how to get you to do stuff, and then how to get you to stop talking.
That's what it was. How can you get your wife to shut up? That's next week.
You told me to listen to her, but she just won't
stop talking. Right. And oh my word, it's so boring. It's like listening to the children around the dinner table. So that's the teaser for next week. We hope that you'll join us again. And bye for now.